Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the different stations carrying this. We have gotten some statistics in that show the thousands of programs that are competing for people's attention. We're talking about the BBC and NPR and the Washington Post, all different media. We're listed in the world in 23rd place. No advertising, no public relations, just word of mouth. So that is due to you sharing the information from our programs and going to PRN.fm and sharing the articles and the documentaries. Today, we have more for you to share. A study from the University of California, Davis, shows that EGCG sensitizes chemotherapeutic-induced cytotoxicity in multiple cancer cell lines. Lay language? According to this report, epigallate catechin 3 gallate, that's your EGCG, that's the major polyphenol in green tea. And that has anti-cancer efficacy. So that's the bottom line. And when used with different chemotherapy agents, it makes the cancer more susceptible to being destroyed. Of course, if we were to take green tea each day, decaffeinated, it can help prevent cancer. And it's been shown in thousands of studies that green tea is one of the most powerful, natural, non-toxic substances that we can use in our body. The Chinese, the Japanese, the South Koreans, people in countries all over the world, including in India and the subcontinent, they're helping prevent disease by using natural ingredients. From the University of Illinois comes a study about how something simple, good nutrition and exercise, benefits your cognition. That's right. This was a 12-week exercise program. They used active-duty Air Force airmen, half of whom also received twice-daily nutrient beverage that included protein, the omega-3 fatty acids, lutein, the phospholipids, vitamin D, the B-complex, and other micronutrients, along with a muscle-promoting compound known as HMB. Both groups improved in physical and cognitive function, with added gains among those who regularly consume the nutritional beverages. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Scientific Reports. So when I took a look, well, there's your vitamin D. That helps the brain. DHA, that helps the brain. The omega-3 fatty acids, again, helping the brain. Phospholipids also help the brain. B-complex helps the brain. So that's a no-brainer. And many of you are taking those nutrients every day. Good for you. From Washington State University comes a study about cannabis reduces OCD symptoms by 50%. Now, OCD is obsessive compulsive disorder. And the severity of the symptoms was reduced by 50% within 4 hours. 4 hours. That's good. So adding to this article published in the Journal of Affective Disorders to the 22,000 articles in PubMed. And yet, we're still not aware of all of its benefits. We should be giving epileptic and seizure and brain tumor and lung cancer and ADHD students the oil, the non-psychoactive oil, that could help them. And we're not. And that's unfortunate. From the University of Maryland comes a study about chronic stroke patients were deficient in vitamin K. So that's not good because that can enhance your opportunity to have a stroke. It doesn't take a lot of vitamin K to meet your requirements. About 100 to 120 micrograms, that's MCG per day, and 90 micrograms for women. And a lot of people don't realize if you're trying to remineralize your bone, yes, you need calcium and magnesium and boron and manganese, but also vitamin D3 and vitamin K. And with this, you're not only mineralizing your bones, but you're also helping to prevent a secondary stroke. From the University of Pittsburgh comes a study published in the Journal of Gerontology and Psychological Sciences that when you socialize, you're going to have a healthier brain microstructure as you age. Or simply stated, as you get older, meaning after the age of 40, you're now an old age, you are on the second half, even further than the second half of your life. You're on the downside. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be on a slippery slope and have diseases and dementia and arthritis and gain weight and muscle mass loss, etc. Doesn't mean that at all. But for the average person, that's exactly what it means. But for those who begin to get out and have friendships, start new friendships, and also reinvigorate yourself. I did a 3-hour lecture yesterday before we all went out for a run in the morning from something someone had mentioned early in the morning about a person came over to me and said, you know, Gary, it's very difficult to find new friends because, well, we're alone. I don't have a family anymore. I did. And so I live alone. And I spend a lot of time on the internet because there's some things I like to listen to that connect me with the reality of the world. I like listening to you, Therese Lead, and I like listening to Gerald Salante and yourself. And so that's kind of my extended friendship. But that doesn't fulfill that vacuum that I used to have when I was younger in life and was a member of different groups, a softball team in the summertime and going places with friends on vacations. All that's gone. And I don't know what to do. I'm lonely. And I know that being lonely causes stress. And stress speeds up the aging process. So I thought about that, and then I did a whole discussion. I do discussions throughout the day, wherever I'm at, wherever I see a need. Sometimes, like yesterday, 5 lectures in one day, 10 hours of lectures yesterday. We're in the last 2 days of our anti-aging clinical study group. And people raise issues, which they should, and I try to address them as I can. But one thing I've said to everyone, being able to relate with other people face-to-face, eye-to-eye, energy-to-energy is so important. And someone spoke up when I was doing the lecture, said, well, I've realized in part from watching a couple videos, including Overcoming the Dark Side, which I've watched 20 times and I'm still getting new insights, and I watch it in 5-minute segments, as well as a lecture you gave earlier in the week about starting over. And this person's a man. He is about, I'm guessing, around 65. I'm guessing. I didn't ask his age. But he said that he has closed a lot of doors in his life because he was impatient. He didn't allow something to evolve to what it should be. So I gave an example of how many people like a good stew. All the hands went up, and I said, well, if you make a good stew, you take your time. You saute the onions till they're translucent, but not brown. The same for the garlic. But then when you take the skin off a tomato, and then you either dice or slice or puree the tomato and put it in, and then you put your oils, grapeseed oil, coconut oil and olive oil, and at the end of the cooking, when the heat is turned off, that's when the oils go in and you stir it, and that's when you put in your seasonings. For example, rosemary, great for certain stews. But as good as that's going to taste an hour later, it tastes much better the next day because everything has had an opportunity to unfold, to release their pheromones and release their enzymes. And the enzymes help in the maturity of a taste. And I saw some heads nodding, and I said, why can't we take that same approach to friendships, relationships? Give them an opportunity to see where they're going. Not everyone reveals themselves immediately. Many people, most people, are afraid that if you see the entirety of a person, both the best and the worst that they are, you'll say, sorry, I don't want it. You know, I like the joy and the happiness, the creativity and the sharing and the caring and the passion, the pleasure. I don't want the drama and the crisis that are hidden. And how often do those come out? Only when a person feels comfortable enough that you've committed to them and therefore they can show you the other part of their being. Why not just have the patience to sit and ask a person, what don't you like about yourself? What's not resolved in your life? Because that's what they're bringing into a relationship. But then here's the key. Remember, we are all imperfect. And if we accept our imperfections and don't project our imperfections as perfectionism onto someone else to make them feel bad about themselves so nobody looks at our own weaknesses, stop being defensive, stop being accusatory, stop blaming other people for what you don't like about yourself. And that's what most people do. You find highly aggressive people always finding imperfection in you. Almost always that's because of their own imperfections that they're trying to hide. That's a control mechanism in relationships. The idea is that dominant alpha, men and women, they'll try to gain an energy position where you don't say anything because they're going to have a smackdown for you in everything you say. So one day you just give up. You suffer in silence. Relationships aren't meant to suffer in silence. They're meant to rejoice in happiness. And if you don't have someone who is harmonizing in their entirety with you, have your differences, but be patient. Give something a period of time. And even if a relationship doesn't work at one point in your life, realize that we are all capable of evolving and should and changing, which is necessary, and not fearing controlling every outcome and therefore being highly defensive and reactionary emotionally. That's the blame game. And let's say a year goes by, or 5 years goes by, or 20 years goes by. And if you feel you've evolved and you're more patient today, more understanding today, more aware today, then reconnect. There's no law that says you can't reconnect, except if you haven't grown or the other person hasn't. Then there's nothing new that you could begin again. Refresh. Restart. And I think that's so important because a lot of people are impatient, so impatient that they don't allow a person to see their reactions instead of reason can be changed. But that's their choice, not yours. Your choice is to explain to people where your boundaries are and therefore what is acceptable or not. If you were to ever come to any of the dinners I have, my social dinners with my friends, which we have once a week, for my entire time in New York, the one thing you'll notice, we're all different. No one ever asks about health to me. No one ever asks the judge about legal issues or the lawyers about legal issues. No one ever asks the medical doctors, of whom there are three, about medical issues, because then it's no longer friends out celebrating their friendship. It's using people because you have a need in that moment. And I can assure you that the doctor or myself don't go out to sit there and be a therapist for you. And when people try to use their relationship for their own therapy, that's a relationship that's going to be short-lived. But if you just accept people for what you can share and leave the rest be, and that's the key, leave what you cannot harmonize with off the table. But we like to think, no, you got to take everything in me, every crisis, every drama, everything, all of my likes and prejudices and biases, you got to take it all. No, you don't. That just pushed the red light on a relationship. But let's say that relationship ends and 10 years later, one day you have an epiphany and wow, why are there so few people in my life? Why isn't there happiness and joy every day? Why do people are very tense around you? Well, maybe it's because you didn't see in yourself what they sensed and felt and observed, and you weren't at that time where you wanted to change it. But now you are. When you change and you see the change, you feel the change, you know the change, then try again, because you're taking that whole new you into your next relationship, whether it's revisiting one or starting a new one. That's why this University of Pittsburgh study is so important, because right now we have tens of millions of older and younger people who are isolated, and they're not having authentic social engagement, and that is adversely affecting the microstructure of their brains, and that leads to negativity. It leads to depression or anxiety and fears, and where you're lost. So the science is there, the hard science. We need people in our lives as friends, as companions, to share our moments with. And the older you get, the more of those moments you need to share, because the less of those moments you have in front of you. So get out of your isolation. And finally, from the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine comes a study about white noise. Now, I'm sure many of you have used white noise. A lot of people can't sleep. They'll put on something that gives them some subtle noise. And when they looked at all the evidence, it means that that white noise that helps you sleep is actually disrupting sleep. Whether it's nature sounds, the whine of a hairdryer, or the insistent hum of a ceiling fan, white noise apps have been downloaded by millions of people around the world in the hope of getting a better night's sleep. However, there is no evidence that it works, and a lot of evidence that it makes it worse. One of the people I know who was having trouble sleeping started playing Waterfalls. And I said, okay, if you need the waterfall to get to sleep, put it on a timer, 5-minute timer. That way it's not occurring throughout the night. You don't want something all night. That's not good. All right. And, well, that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to play you a continuation of this series on Wag the Dog. It is a 9-hour series, and I'm taking specific clips. These are all mainstream scientists and physicians explaining behind the scenes what it means to repurpose viruses and bacteria to weaponize them. But they don't use the word weaponized. It's about enhanced usage. And many people believe that the coronavirus was exactly that. The evidence is rather overwhelming if you're looking at all of it. I'm going to share some, including I'm going to share something that is said, and then I'm going to share the statements from the Nobel Prize-winning scientist, one in medicine in 2008, Professor Luc Montagnier, who says that he discovered not only the HIV virus, what is called the human immunodeficiency virus, but he is adding his voice to all those scientists around the world who believe the new Corona-19 virus was created in a laboratory. Now, he was interviewed on CNews channel in France, and he asserted that the virus had been designed by molecular biologists, and he stated that it contains genetic elements of HIV. Well, lo and behold, you're going to hear some other people, separate and completely apart from him, who have not communicated with him, didn't even read his scientific paper on it, who agree, because these characteristics could not have arisen naturally. Then you're going to hear scientists at a panel inside an office in Pittsburgh, all scientists talking about why it's good to do this research, but, you know, there are some downsides, but the downsides are, you know, well, we just have to get through it. Yeah, that's what we're getting through now. So, he said that, quote, the virus was a professional job, a meticulous job, end quote. He said, they described the genome as being clockwork of sequences, end quote. Quote, there's a part which is obviously the classic virus. There's another mainly coming from the bat, but that part has added sequences, particularly HIV, the AIDS virus. Did you know that the coronavirus has an AIDS gene in it that wouldn't have been natural, had to be genetically engineered? So right now, there is growing evidence that the virus was designed. Montagnier also pointed out that he wasn't the first scientist to assert that the coronavirus was created in a laboratory. Previously, on January 31, 2020, a research group from India had published a paper suggesting that aspects of the virus bore, quote, uncanny similarity, end quote, to HIV. But pressure was brought upon them to try to rescind that, to walk it back. So we've had things like this going on, and we're sharing them with you a little bit each day. There's a lot to share, but for the first time, it's not just a handful of us talking about what's wrong with the pandemic, how it's been put into a weaponized mode affecting all of us. But now there are hundreds of thousands of us, and we are a growing voice. And people are saying, I'm not taking your vaccine because you have no proof that it'll work. You have no proof that it won't infect me. You have no proof that those nanoparticles that you say you can read my status will not also be able to transmit signals into my body. And since it is also a part of the DARPA plan, and they deal in weaponizing, what is this all about? What is the larger picture? We'll get to that next week when we have a special one-hour program on the reset. And you don't want to go along with the reset that they're suggesting that was developed by the head of the Economic Forum, World Economic Forum. So we'll tell you what you need in the way of facts, and then you can decide what you want to accept. And by the way, Professor Bill Willers, that's W-I-L-L-E-R-S, was a professor at Harvard's Chan School of Public Health. He's also been editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine since 2019. And there was an editorial in the journal, Dying in a Leadership Vacuum, excoriated the Trump administration for having mishandled the COVID-19 pandemic, with editors concluding that such leadership should be thrown out of office. Okay. I have nothing good to say about Trump. However, when you look at the people who are the authors, oh, wow, we see that in the forms, the relevant financial activities outside of the submitted work, we see the author of the New England Journal of Deputy Editor, Lindsay Baton, has received grants from the Wellcome Trust. That's Burroughs Wellcome, the people who make AZT, the Ragon Institute, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Anthony Fauci's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the mainstream media's highest profile health expert. And the reason for the grants, in every single case, it's there. It says, quote, vaccine development. What we know now is people who are need vaccines, anyone who suggests otherwise, but we want any vaccine or specific pharmaceutical company vaccines. We're all being played, people. Just want to share that with you. And we've posted the entire global research article for you to download. And also today, time permitting, we will have a commentary from Chris Hedges. I was going to do it yesterday, didn't have time because I did a separate commentary. This is called The Politics of Cultural Despair, published on October 19th in Sheer Post. And we'll have a commentary also today from John Whitehead. Don't vote for a psychopath. We have a lot to share. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
The Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989 was enacted into law May 22, 1990. It provided for the implementation of the Biological Weapons Convention as well as criminal penalties for violation of its provisions. This Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act was drafted by University of Illinois International Law professor Francis Boyle. The act broadly defined several terms related to biological warfare. Those terms were vector, toxin, biological agent, and delivery system. The act defined biological agent as any microorganism, virus, infectious substance, or biological product that may be engineered as a result of biotechnology or any naturally occurring or bioengineered component of any such microorganism, virus, infectious substance, or biological product capable of causing death, disease, or other biological malfunction in a human, an animal, a plant, or another living organism. Deterioration of food, water, equipment, supplies, or materials of any kind, or deleterious alteration of the environment. These exact words can be found in the U.S. Code, and for more information on that, you can see my first documentary called Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination. Previous United States interpretation of the Biological Weapons Convention ban on biological agents was in line with the BWATA definition. However, the United States now maintains that Article 1 of the Biological Weapons Convention, which explicitly bans bioweapons, does not apply to non-lethal biological agents. According to the Federation of American Scientists, current U.S. work on non-lethal agents greatly exceeds limitations set forth in the Biological Weapons Convention. The act made it illegal to buy, sell, or manufacture biological agents for use as a weapon. With passage of this act, it became known as Public Law 101-298 upon its passage and signing, and provided for criminal penalties for those who violated its provisions. Just one problem. The act specifically exempted what is called peaceful or defensive biological weapons research. In other words, the most deadly of viruses can be trafficked and studied, recreated, and genetically altered to be even worse if the research is labeled as peaceful or defensive, making the provisions of this act almost impossible to enforce, especially when it is the National Institutes of Health that are funding most of these defensive or peaceful biological weapons research, which they call as basic research. As we'll find out, there is no difference whatsoever between basic or so-called legitimate peaceful research and biological weapons research. They are one in the same. The act dictated sentencing for violators and stated that whoever knowingly develops, produces, stockpiles, transfers, acquires, retains, or possesses any biological agent, toxin, or delivery system for use as a weapon or knowingly assists a foreign state or any other organization to do so shall be fined under this title or in prison for life or any term of years or both. The act also provides that if a quantity of biological agent or toxin appeared to have no peaceful purpose, it could be seized and subsequently destroyed. In addition, passage of the act made violation of its provisions a federal crime. And so we can possibly understand the intent behind these so-called scientists who are conducting gain-of-function research on what otherwise would be called a biological weapon, why they are defending their actions. In other words, the terms peaceful and defensive are being used as an excuse to create the worst kind of biological weapons as a sort of workaround for this Biological Weapons Act, to avoid its provisions through dual-use research, and call them as basic or legitimate research. Again, there is no difference between basic, legitimate research and biological weapons creation. And this fact will be shown in great detail as we proceed. Francis Boyle, the author of this Biological Weapons Act, had this to say about COVID-19.
I think I found the smoking gun here. There was a recent scientific study published in Antiviral Research 10 February 2020 by three scientists from France and one from Montreal who did a genetic analysis of the Wuhan coronavirus, and they said, quote, it may provide a gain of function of the 219 coronavirus for efficient spreading in the human population compared to other viruses. Let me repeat that. May provide a gain of function to the 2019 coronavirus for efficient spreading in the human population compared to other lineage coronaviruses. That's the smoking gun for a offensive biological warfare agent. Gain of function properties is a tip-off. It's only useful for offensive biological warfare activity, and it is typically conducted in either a BSL-4 or a BSL-3 facility. And there in Wuhan, you have the only BSL-4 facility in China. So I think it's clear it came out of this lab. Gain of function, means it's DNA genetically engineered to be more lethal and more infectious. Gain of function means it's DNA genetically engineered to be more lethal and more infectious. Clearly, what we're seeing now with this coronavirus, it is basically SARS, which is already a weaponized version of a coronavirus. SARS, which is already a weaponized version of a coronavirus that has leaked out of that laboratory at least twice before. The weaponized version of a coronavirus that has leaked out of that laboratory at least twice before. And then it is given gain of function properties, which basically means it can travel by air for at least 6 feet and is more lethal. Second, we have an article here from the Nat Med, 2015, December 21. SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronases show potential for human emergence. This was at the University of North Carolina. They in Chapel Hill. They have a biosafety lab level 3 there, and I have previously condemned them for using gain of function work on MERS. MERS, which is the Middle East respiratory syndrome. It is like SARS, only more dangerous. It has a 33% lethality rate. And they were doing gain of function work there to make it even more lethal. Well, it turns out if you read the article, they admit that they were doing this with SARS, that they were giving it a gain of function activity. And it turns out part of their team was a researcher from China, Zheng Li Shi, key laboratory of special pathogens and biosafety, Wuhan Institute of Virology, Chinese Academy of Sciences. And they gave a grant to the University of North Carolina to get their scientists in on this extremely dangerous Nazi-type biological warfare work. So it appears that what happened was, instead of stealing this technology, China bought it. And they bought it from the lab there at the University of North Carolina. They put their person in there. They took the technology and they brought it back to the Wuhan lab. It's right there. This fellow works for the Wuhan lab. And it also appears that the North Carolina lab got cells from Fort Detrick, which is the U.S. Major facility for the research, development, testing, stockpiling of biological weapons. Fort Detrick is the U.S. equivalent of Port Endowment. So that's where they got some of their cells here. And they made it clear the work that they were doing was to increase the pathogenicity of original SARS by giving it this gain of function activity.
As I started looking at this information, and as I started seeing that this is actually a chimeric version, something that was developed here in the United States in 2015, it was published in Nature magazine, that it was developed in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where all the initial studies were done. The chimeric research, despite having a moratorium by the U.S. government to prevent any chimeric research, by the way, just so your audience understands, chimeric research basically means that they're taking a naturally occurring substance or virus, in this case, and then mutating it, genetically modifying it, changing the configuration morphologically to gain function. It's called a gain of function study or gain of function research. And that basically means that they're making something that already may have some potential to cause harm, making it more harmful, making it more virulent, making it more resistant, making it more harmful, making it more virulent, making it more resistant. And basically, that's what I found, that they took the SHC014 strain of the coronavirus, the surface antigen component, and brought in the backbone from the SARS coronavirus, put them together, and then inserted HIV and MERS, and then inserted HIV and MERS, and then inserted HIV and MERS orthologs on top of it to make a more virulent, more detrimental virus. Now, the thing is that
if I could jump in for just a moment here, because what I think you're talking about is the moratorium that was placed, and then $3.7 million from the National Institute of Health was transferred to China so they could continue this research, even though the moratorium, so they basically outsourced this research to China. So they basically outsourced this research to China. Is this the same topic we're talking about here? This news is just breaking?
Yes, this is exactly right. So it goes back to 2014. The US government decided, based upon certain virologists at that time, saying that, look, there's no justification for this kind of research. There's a potential for it to cause harm, cause a pandemic. So there's no justification for us to do this type of research. So the government passed a moratorium in 2014. Fauci approved monies to be sectioned for this type of research. So basically, and I'm getting really, every time I think about this, it gets me really flustered because I'm so angry that he basically broke the law. He more than broke the law. He created this entire cascade that we're seeing with the world shutdown was created by this initial aspect back in 2015. He broke the law. He went against government moratoriums. He took taxpayer money and he funded research that has now led to the COVID-19. In 2017, he was documented at Georgetown University saying that there will be a pandemic that this presidency will face, that this term will face. How did he know that in 2017 that something was going to happen in 2018, 19, or 2020? You can't predict the market from 3 days from today, what's going to happen. How did he know that there was going to be a pandemic? He stated the president of this president will face a pandemic. The exact quotes, I don't want to say the exact words. You guys have the video footage.
There is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious diseases, both chronic infectious diseases in the sense of already ongoing disease, and we have certainly a large burden of that, but also there will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak. There will be a surprise outbreak.
My point is that when somebody starts making these type of statements, and then they were involved with the breaking of the law to fund the research that American taxpayers paid for, that then goes to Wuhan and now trying to create this diversion and say that it was China. God, I don't know whether it came from China or released in China, whether it was already released here. It's irrelevant. The complicity of what's going on right now, whether it was released in China or whether it was already here or however it happened, the U.S. system has condoned it, has jumped on it. They're opportunistic. They're shutting down the economy when they know, in fact, that there's no basis.
Is Fauci directly responsible for this pandemic because he maneuvered the money, he maneuvered around the moratorium, kept this chimeric research going in China? Is he directly responsible for not just the pandemic, but also the response that's killed the economy, put, 17 to 22 million people out of work? Is Fauci directly responsible?
I'm going to say this. I think I've seen some petitions going around. I know Dr. Shiva said that Fauci should be fired. I think that's the nicest thing that could be done to Fauci. I think he's a criminal. He's broken the law. He's going against the government. I mean, to me, that seems like it's a traitorous thing to do when the government has passed a regulation and he's at one of the highest levels in the NIH. He's got a directorship at the NIH, and then he breaks the law, he breaks the moratorium, and then funds research against something that could potentially cause harm throughout the entire world, and he's in collusion with the foreign government to do. I mean, I don't know. That's a matter for attorneys to decide. But I'll tell you something. Fauci goes back to 1981. In 1981, he called HIV/AIDS the gay disease, and he was the one who funded the research behind a drug 3 years before it was even established that there was a real virus. So the virus was established in 1984. In 1981, he was pushing the agenda of a drug prophylactically to treat people for a condition that has now been seen to be related to lifestyle, nutritional status, all sorts of other things. He was pushing the agenda to push a drug that caused so much harm as a prophylactic, just to prevent HIV. Now, this goes back to 1981. We're talking 39 years. This guy has a history of pushing an agenda. But now the president comes out and says there's a drug called hydroxychloroquine, which has been on the market for God knows 50, 60, 70 years, and another drug, Zithromax, which has been, it's a macrolide that's been around for at least, that class of drugs has been around for at least 70, 80 years. Maybe Zithromax has been around for, I don't know, 20 years, whatever the case is. These are established drugs. They're safe drugs. Using them in combination, they're doctors that have shown at least 99% efficacy. They've shown hundreds and hundreds of patients they've treated. Nobody's died. Symptoms resolve within an hour, hour and a half to a day and a half, 2 days. Okay, so you've got this class. The president brings it out. And Fauci says, get this, Fauci says, unless there's some studies to show that, it should not be used. Yet he's promoting a vaccine that we have no idea what the hell that's going to do. And he's saying that's okay to use? I mean, if that does not show a conflict of interest, I don't know what does. People need to wake up and realize there is a massive criminal component to this. This entire world economy, the whole world economy shutting down, it comes back to one person, in my opinion, and that's Fauci. Now, there's other people that are involved with the charade, obviously, but Fauci is the person that they put up in the front, and Fauci is the one who had the ability to stop this. Fauci has told a friend of mine, Judy Mikowitz, who I was...
Okay. That's a perspective you're not going to hear anywhere else in the media. Now, tomorrow you're going to hear the actual scientists who do the work every day in their universities and laboratories to do what he said was gain of function, making something more deadly, and where a disease outbreak would occur in animals, it would not jump species to humans. They've engineered viruses to jump species. That's what the gain of function does. Why? Interesting, we're going to hear their comments. And I'm sure they didn't intend for these comments to go public. So that's tomorrow. And by the way, the producer of this special is Clint Richardson. We've been trying to get him on the program. We can't locate him yet, but we will in time. I'm concerned. I know you're concerned, but it seems like those in power are not as concerned because they're not looking for the truth. They're looking to control the agenda. They're looking to control the narrative, and they're succeeding. Doesn't matter whether it's left or right. Doesn't matter whether it's Trump or Biden. It's all the same because the outcome is the same. So if you're a person that is feeling despair, and if you believe that the social fabric of our country has been ruptured, and that the personal bonds, the cultural bonds, the ethnic bonds, the bonds of our beliefs have been shattered by identity politics, and then it's been manifesting in a hate campaign to hate each other, to divide each other, it's working because now we have a full-fledged manifestation of self-destructive pathologies. Well, that takes us away from paying attention to why this is being done, what is the ultimate agenda, and who's behind it. And I trust Chris Hedges' insights. I'm sure many of you had similar insights. And what it means is this: the physical and moral decay of the United States and the malaise, it has spawned, have predictable results, cause and effect. We have seen in varying forms the consequences of social and political collapse. We saw it Look at history. The Greek, the Roman empires, the Ottoman empires, the Habsburg empires, the Tsarist Russia, the Weimar Republic, the former Yugoslavia, voices from the past. Go back and read Aristotle, Cicero, Dostoevsky, Joseph Roth. Listen to the people who were ahead of their time, who were present, examined everything from the larger view of life. They warned us. We didn't listen. But blinded by self-delusion and hubris, as if we are somehow exempt from human experience and human nature, we refuse to listen. When you look around, at those of us who, let's say, are baby boomers, are there times in life where you felt it was less complicated, more exciting, where you were gaining education, gaining insight, gaining the first of relationships, the first of experiences, where you had your favorite music, your favorite dress, your favorite hairstyle, where you have unique friendships, where you were open and free to experience life, to make its mistakes, learn its lessons? Do you ever think maybe we could bring some of that back? And yet every single indice shows that we will not be able to bring that back. Why? Because, according to Chris Hedges, the United States is a shadow of itself. I agree. It squanders its resources in futile military adventurism. We've talked about it. You've heard me say 100 times why there was absolutely no justification, no legitimacy to attacking and destroying Gaddafi's Libya, the safest nation, the safest country of the 54 countries in Africa, the most educated, the longest lifespans, the most literate, the wealthiest, no debt, and sharing with the rest of the African Union. He was their leader. But Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama stopped that. Has the media asked them to apologize? No. Will they apologize? No. Those are signs of sociopathology, the incompatibility with facing and accepting the results of your actions and having no emotional feelings towards it. Did anyone apologize for the efforts in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria? No. The regime changes in Honduras, in Ukraine, elsewhere? No. But tens of millions of lives were wrecked, failed states, enraged fanatics. Think of this for a moment. There are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world. That's 24% of the total global population. And we have turned virtually all of them into our enemies. That's according to Chris Hedges. Yeah, we have. We are piling up massive deficits. On yesterday's program, I read an article that Richard Gallen had written showing you that we are so far in debt, hundreds of trillions of dollars, states, governments at the local level, the federal government, individuals, mortgages, credit cards, student debt, car loans. We are bankrupt, except for those who've made over $800 billion in profits because of coronavirus and the shutdown of our society. And yet nothing is being done. Have you seen any effort at the federal state level to improve basic infrastructure, including electrical grids, roads, bridges, public transportation? No. But spending more on the military-industrial complex, a completely cancerous, metastasized phenomena over our entire government, yeah, that they'll pay for willingly, more than what is even asked, and yet not a penny to deconstruct the ghettoization of America and the offshoring of jobs. If we were to give $2 trillion, according to an article I read this morning, we could virtually put that into renewable energies. We could plant, in my opinion, 2 billion trees a year just in the United States. Then we can motivate the world to do the same, and we could try to keep down the temperature. We're doing none of the above. In fact, we're doing nothing for the earth, nothing for the working class, nothing for the poor. Everything is for those in power. We are the world's largest producer and exporter of arms and munitions. The virtues we argue, we have a right to impose by force on others. We abuse human rights, democracy, the free market, the rule of law, and our individual freedoms. They have all been sacrificed. We are mocked around the world because of the grotesque levels of social inequality and austerity programs that have impoverished most people, especially our democratic institutions. We are living through an American burlesque, darkly humorous with its absurdities, from Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is one seriously flawed person. But what have we done about correcting our underlying pathologies? How about nothing? Why? Simple. Strong activism by lobbyists, by consultants, by people who work on the important lobbying street in Washington, D.C. have captured our entire government and the United Nations. And most of our NGOs are misguided. They're supposed to be liberal institutions. Do you remember what Barack Obama did? I do. Yep. Increase the carbon expenditures. As a result, we are a hotter planet and coming closer to hitting that 2 degrees Celsius increase, which would make a lot of life uninhabitable. So just understand that unrequited despair raises your cortisol level. That, in turn, can kill you. The very social fabric has been ruptured, and it's manifesting itself in all these self-destructive and aggressive pathologies. But we're not doing anything to correct it. We're only feeding it. And that has led us to a place where we are now finally recognizing if we do not stand up, we do not speak out, we do not confront the power that be, that we will be its ultimate victims, all of us. We'll be dealing with this in greater detail on tomorrow's program. I want to take a few minutes now to give you our special. This is really a phenomenal special, and why? Put it in proper context. I spent 33 years out of my adult life as a senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and head of their anti-aging medicine research division. I've done 44 clinical studies. I'm just finishing in the next 2 days my latest one, third of the year. I've spent the entire year working with people on campus and at home to see can we slow down and reverse any of the objective hallmarks of aging, and it's working, and we have. The ultimate article on this, or a series of articles, and a documentary that we're producing, and we're in post-production right now, will be released shortly, so you can all benefit. But one of the things we have seen in the last 10 years that I'm very optimistic about is the American conscious becoming aware that we have superfoods, foods that if you look at the scientific peer review literature are really important. But the trouble is the average person doesn't know, well, should I take one food? And so a person starts to take pomegranate. Good for them. It's terrific for you. But 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, I decided to see if I could do what I'd never done before. Take all organic ingredients I could get from all the superfoods that I knew of or existed that I was aware of in the world, put them all together, no homogenization, so that you can flood the body with the most powerful natural antioxidants, phytonutrients, to maximize their benefit for the people. And that ended up being a product called the Anti-Aging Elixir. So, what's in it? Listen carefully, because any one of these would do you good. And this is vegan, kosher, gluten-free, and halal. Organic apple, organic mangosteen, organic tart cherry, organic pomegranate, organic acai, organic nopal, organic noni, organic turmeric, organic ginger, an organic sea buckthorn, an ascorbic acid, an organic mango, an organic papaya, organic guar, organic lychee, an organic beetroot, organic aloe vera, and wolfberry, also called goji, elderberry, that's hard to get today, cranberry, blueberry, kakadu, that's a plum, moringa, organic baobab, organic macai, organic stevia, and graviola flavor. All of that, every one of those ingredients, very difficult to get, especially with all the problems of not producing enough food and having an excessive requirement because of COVID. But we managed to get them all. And there's dozens of organic superfoods. They're all in the elixir. Now, it's not sweet. It's kind of a slightly sweet, slightly tart. You look at it and it's cloudy. You got to shake it up, keep it refrigerated, because I didn't want to homogenize it. I wanted you to get as much of the whole phytonutrient as possible. So that is what you're getting. If there's one thing I take with me everywhere that I have every day is my anti-aging elixir, because there's more in it than any other thing I've ever created. It's powerful. So here's the deal today. And by the way, it's a big bottle, almost 34 ounces. It's potent. It is known as the potent anti-aging elixir. But I'm going to give you four gifts today. Get this, for the cost of one elixir. The total value, $122.40. How much are you spending? $59.99. How much are you saving? $62.46. You're also going to get a copy of the award-winning DVDs, Power Aging. You're going to get a whole organic mint dark chocolate bar. That's the 70% chocolate and 3.5 ounces. You're going to get a sample serving of nitric cell stuff. You're going to get a sample serving of a packet of superfood breakfast. Yeah, all that you're getting today. By the way, that dark chocolate is organic cacao beans, organic coconut sugar, organic cocoa butter, organic mint. It's gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, non-MGO, and kosher. You're getting the whole bar today. So you're getting all that, and all you have to do is call this number. We just got the order in today. That's why they called and said, can we offer today? So your anti-aging essential box, you're getting a whole bunch of stuff. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. All that for $59.99. And have you noticed that I haven't raised any of my prices, though everyone else out there has, because all of my costs go up? I didn't pass any of those on. So you're all getting a discount. And today you're saving $62. You're saving more than what you're spending. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.